I want you to join me in 1 Chronicles chapter number 16, where we are talking about the day that the Ark of God's Covenant was brought to the new capital city of Jerusalem. And everybody is very excited about it. There's lots of singing and dancing and celebration, and there is a great big public prayer that is given by David. And then at the end of 1 Chronicles 16:36, it says, "Then all the people said, Amen, and they praised the Lord." And so now we come to the climactic moment in which the Ark of God's throne, because that's what the Ark of the Covenant actually is, has been placed underneath this tent in probably the courtyard of David's palace, which I believe is in the northern end of this city of David, which just a few months earlier had been Jebus, the city of the Canaanites, but it was taken intact, and now it's been renamed Jerusalem. And so now it is time for David to kind of put into place the worship schedule that's going to happen from here on out during his kingdom. So 1 Chronicles 16:37. "So David left Asaph and his brothers there before the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is to minister regularly before the Ark as each day required." Now, we've talked about this idea that back at the very beginning of the ministry of Samuel, the Ark of the Covenant had been separated from the tabernacle building, from the tabernacle structure. And even when Saul was king, the Ark of the Covenant was at Kiriath Yearim, and the tabernacle seems to be at Gibeon, a few miles away. They were not together. So we've had this long-term disruption of the designated worship from the instructions of the Torah, from the instructions of the law. Well, that's not getting fixed here. The tabernacle is going to remain at Gibeon, and I think part of it is because David does not have, shall we say, the political or spiritual capital to insist that it be moved to Jerusalem. And he doesn't wish for the Ark of God's throne to be sent away from the capital city. So it's not David who's going to bring these things all together again. So he instead says, okay, we're going to worship God at both places using the schedule of the law. So Asaph, who is one of the Levitical leaders of this time, and his name shows up on some of the Psalms, and people associated closely with him, they're going to be worshiping God daily at Jerusalem at the Ark Tabernacle, at the Ark Tent. Now, he's going to have some assistance there. Verse 38, "Also Obed-Edom and his 68 brothers, while Obed-Edom, the son of Joduthun and Hosa, were to be gatekeepers." So Obed-Edom was the, apparently, Levite in whose house the Ark of the Covenant has been for about 3 months. And so he is given a special responsibility here at Jerusalem to help provide security and worship for God's throne area. Verse 39, But David left Zadok, the priest, and his brothers, the priests, before the tabernacle of he who is in the high place that was at Gibeon. And this, I believe, is the first clear indication, the specific sighting, that the tabernacle and its services were going on at Gibeon, a few miles to the northwest from Jerusalem. And what will they be doing there, the priests? Well, the same thing they've been doing, apparently, to offer burnt offerings to he who is on the altar of burnt offering regularly, morning and evening, and to do all that is written in the law of he who is that he commanded Israel. So we're going to have dual worship services going on, a few miles apart, the tabernacle and the tent of God's ark throne. Verse 41, with them, that is over at Gibeon, were Heman and Jeduthun, whose names also appear in some of the Psalms, and the rest of the chosen and expressly named to give thanks to he who is for his chesed, his steadfast love endures forever. And that is a line from one of the favorite Psalms that we've been seeing. Heman and Jeduthun had trumpets and cymbals for the music and instruments for sacred song. The sons of Jeduthun were appointed to the gate. So we have security at both places. Not just anyone can wander in to these worship complexes. And that goes along with the rules of the Torah, the law given by God through Moses almost 450 years earlier. So everything is now set back up. Two places of worship, but we're using the same divine cycle that comes out of the law at both places. So we're going to have worship morning and afternoon. Now, I'm always intrigued, and we don't have any clear-cut understandings how this happened, is that the Ark of the Covenant was only specifically accessed by the high priest once a year on Yom Kippur. But the Yom Kippur ceremony used the altar of sacrifice in order to do some of the sacrificial procedures inside the Holy of Holies. So I'm wondering, did they take that extra bit of time between these two sites to make sure that they followed those procedures? And I'm guessing they would have tried their best. Verse 43. Then all the people departed, each to his house, and David went home to bless his household. And so everything has been finished for the official parade and dedication and establishment of ceremony for the Ark of God's throne to arrive at Jerusalem at the palace. Now you may remember what we've already read from 2 Samuel, that David did something special on this day to bless the people who have come from all over to participate in this very important service. 2 Samuel 6:18. When David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of he who is over the armies, that's Yahweh Tzabaoth, and he distributed among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, a cake of bread, a portion of meat that would be from the sacrifices, and a cake of raisins to each. So he basically gives to all the people a celebratory meal. And then we have the parallel from the First Chronicles passage, then all the people departed, each to his house. So the ceremonies are all now finished for the day. And probably a few people from farther away spent one more night and then got up in the morning and went back home. But David is right there where he lives, because there's every indication that the tent that he set up for the Ark throne of God is right there in his courtyard, right there in his residence's courtyard. So he has a very short walk back home. Verse 20, David returned to bless his household. More than likely meaning he came home to celebrate with them and to have a nice meal with everybody. Now, who all's in his household? A lot more than what should be. He's got quite a few wives now living in this palace, and he's got a few little babies by now, or maybe toddlers as well, that are growing up in the palace as well. But we don't focus on all of those people. We focus instead on the senior wife. Technically, she should be the senior wife. I'm not sure altogether how that works, since she was forcibly divorced by her father from David, and then David forcibly divorced her from her second husband and effectively remarried her. So I'm not sure how, you know, all of that fits with the senior wife status. Regardless, the text says that Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David. Now, the last time we heard about her on this day is that she was up in the window, maybe a balcony, but she had some sort of above-ground line of sight of the parade arriving at Jerusalem, coming through that gate on the west side and coming into the palace complex so that God's throne could be placed under that tent. And she hated what she was seeing. She hated the fact that David, the king, was not dressed up like a king. He apparently didn't have his crown on. He was wearing the celebratory gear of the priests and Levites. It was a nice ephod. It was a nice piece of linen cloth, but it was not his normal royal robes. And she hated him for dancing around that way. Now that comes out. She said to him, and you have to understand, this is very sarcastic. It is bitterly and biting sarcasm. Oh, how the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows shamelessly uncovers himself. So she just throws it out there in his face. You didn't look very kingly today, dancing around out there without your kingly robes on, with all those people that you would normally mix with, including servants of the common people. Now, David does something here that I don't think is appropriate. One of the things I try to counsel couples on is when you're fighting, never escalate. It's a bad idea. It's just going to make it worse. Don't go after the other person, regardless of how they came after you. But David was not taking that sort of advice. He instead escalates, and he attempts to be just as biting and bitter toward her. And I'm trying to be honest in our evaluation here. David could have a temper. We know that. We've seen it before. And so David said to Michal, you know, the woman that he's supposed to love with all his heart, soul, and strength, It was before he who is who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me as prince over Israel, the people of he who is. And I will celebrate before he who is. So basically says, I wasn't dancing with those people. I was dancing before the God who chose me above your dad and above your brothers and above your uncle. So he made this personal. And then he says, I will celebrate before he who is. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this. And I will be abased in your eyes. Again, he makes this personal between him and Michal. He is mad at her. And I tried to share this with you before. Their relationship has been ruined by a sequence of events. And some of it I think we can speculate about as to why it went this way. For whatever reason, David did not rescue her from the palace in those couple of years after she helped him escape and he was on the run. And she ends up being forcibly divorced by her dad and remarried to somebody else. So David did not rescue her in that time period. And not only that, he got married to 2, 3, 4 other women during that same period. And then a couple of years after her father's death and her brother's, three of her brother's deaths in battle, David insists that the only way that he will accept this treaty between the northern tribes and the tribe of Judah to make him the universal king, and Ishbaal, another one of Michal's brothers, to kind of step down from the throne, is that Michal has to be forcibly divorced from her current husband and remarried back to David. And she ends up coming back into David's life with a whole bunch of other women. That was not a good situation between these two. And that's why there's so much bitterness being brought up at this point. And so David basically tells her, I don't care how you perceive me. It's how God perceives me that matters. Which, in another context, might be perfectly appropriate, but not here in the context of a marriage. Verse 22, I will make myself yet more contemptible than this. I'll be abased in your eyes, but by the female servants of whom you've spoken, by them I shall be held in honor. So, yeah, the women you're looking down on because of their jobs, which she apparently was. I mean, she is a princess. Says, those ladies will respect me more than you're respecting me. Now, I need to make a couple of comments here. Critiques. Particularly those of you that might be youth minister sorts. I have heard more than one youth minister talk about this episode of David dancing, that he was dancing in his underwear. Stop it. He most certainly was not. And you might get a funny giggle out of your young people over that, but it is not biblically accurate, and you need to quit it. Be attentive to the word, not to trying to amuse your students. The other thing is, David may have been doing the right thing to celebrate God at this time in this way. But he is not guiltless or faultless in the way that he deals with Michal when he comes home. And we need to be honest about that. We learn lessons, Paul says, from the Scripture, both good and bad, from the behaviors of the people in the past. Now, one more thing. Verse 23 says, Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death. And I have heard and seen more than one commentator claim that that was God's punishment to her for being so rude to David. No. We are aware that David and Michal were married for possibly as much as a decade before David had to escape with her help out of the palace, away from her father's murderous intent. And they'd had no children. Therefore, Michal already had some sort of physical limitation previous to this. And I am guessing that the events I've already gone over with how she came back into the household of David, did not contribute to a good relationship between the two of them that might have brought children into the world. But there's no likelihood that unless God had intervened, that she would have been able to have children anyway. So I think this is, verse 23 is just simply an incidental comment that of David's wives, Michal, the princess, the daughter of Saul, is one that never had any kids with him. None. Let's continue now with the next story that we are not altogether certain when it takes place. Probably, this is my guess, it happens after the upgrades of the Jebusite big house that were donated by Hiram, the king of the Phoenicians, the king of Sidon, I think, or maybe Tyre. Those things were gifted, remember, when David took the city intact. It would have taken a few years for all of those upgrades to take place. And I think once David was sitting in that upgraded, beautiful palace in the north end of the most ancient part of Jerusalem, and by the way, that's to the south side of the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount did not exist in David's time period as a special place. It was a grain processing area. The ancient city of Jerusalem was a very small oval city, well-walled, south of the Temple Mount. And so the big palace of David is in the north end of that. I've been in the ruins of it. It's a wonderful place to kind of stand in, to think about it being where David, and then later for a little bit, Solomon ruled from. But I think this is what went through David's head as he sat in that brand new upgraded palace. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 1. Now, when the king lived in his house, and he who is had given him rest from all his surrounding enemies, and I think that's a reference to uniting Israel, it may have some of the military action that's coming up in the next chapter involved, but we can't be sure. But he's basically secure in his new capital city, in his new palace. And so the king said to Nathan the prophet, and that's the first time we've seen him mentioned, "See now, I dwell in a house of cedar." Now the cedars of Lebanon were very special in construction, including making paneling, because then the place would smell very fragrant, as well as having this carved surface, because they would have carved it. So David's looking around at his new palace paneling. He says, "See, I dwell in a house of cedar. But God's throne, the ark of God, dwells in a tent. And I can see him kind of gesturing toward the courtyard just outside his palace. And he sees that that's incongruous. It's not right because God is the king of Israel. David is just the under king. So Nathan gets caught up in the moment of David's intention to build God a special palace. And Nathan said to the king, "Go, do all that's in your heart, for he who is with you." Now that's from Nathan's personal feelings. It's not from anything that God told him, because God talks to him that night when he gets home. That same night, the word of he who is came to Nathan. "Go, tell my servant David, thus says he who is, would you build me a house to dwell in?" And that's a question that's expecting a negative answer. It is a chiding. "I have not lived in a house since the day I brought up the people of Israel from Egypt to this day, but I have been moving about in a tent for my dwelling. In all places where I've moved with all the people of Israel, did I speak a word to any of the judges of Israel, whom I commanded to shepherd my people Israel, saying, 'Why have you not built me a house of cedar?'" So nowhere did God ever command any of the leaders of Israel in over four centuries to build him a physical house. Verse 8, "Now therefore, thus you shall say to my servant David, thus says Yahweh Tzabaoth, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, that you should be prince over my people Israel." And since we're out of time, we're going to have to pause right there. So David has a good thing that he wants to do, but God is going to tell him, "You're not the guy for the job."